This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's News Radio 1070 WINA, Charlottesville Right Now, and Jay in for Coy Barefoot this afternoon. And boy, a lot happens politically in our country, and he is, I would say this, and we'll see if he agrees with it, the most quoted political analyst in our country. At least we think so. And that would be Dr. Larry Sabato with the University of Virginia Center for Politics has been kind enough to spend a few minutes with us today, and we appreciate it. Good afternoon, Dr. Sabato, and thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Jay, and I'm too old to care.
Well, there it is. All right, speaking of old, I hate to use that as a segue, but Senator Robert Byrd has passed at age 92. Just what did he bring to the U.S. Senate, Dr. Sabato, and what has, I guess, our country lost in Senator Byrd?
Well, he brought proof of redemption. He was a member of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the most interesting remembrances was written by somebody who covered his first campaign in 1958 and refused to vote for him because he had been a member of the KKK, and of course, in later years, was much more enlightened on racial matters. People change in their lifetimes, and they can make a difference in various ways. I'd say his record is complicated, and maybe that describes many of us and what we do, but it's complicated and layered, and it's a record that is so long, you have to look at it in segments, and you have to examine it as a whole. Maybe that's what we'd all want.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Larry Sabato from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Again, on Senator Byrd, as we've heard the different reports about how much, and everybody, pork, all this pork that was going to West Virginia and all. When you look at that situation, would people consider him very effective in getting a lot of money to be funneled to West Virginia?
Well, West Virginians would. Every time I visited West Virginia or driven through there for some political event, I don't think I've gone 10 miles without seeing something named after him. I actually have a problem with that. I don't believe that senators or congressmen should be allowed to name things after themselves using taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm in a small minority, apparently, because if you go around the country, you'll find an awful lot of facilities named after sitting congressmen and sitting senators. But nonetheless, if you were a West Virginian, I suppose that was a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly West Virginians who believe some of it was a waste of money. But there are others who understood that it was a poor state, it is a poor state, and they needed all the help they can get. I always tell people, when a senior senator dies or resigns or loses or simply leaves office and for some other way, billions, literally billions, are transferred to other states. That's what seniority means. West Virginia has lost more than they know financially. They suspect it, but they'll never know precisely. Same was true when Arlen Specter was defeated in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania will lose a great deal. Senator Bob Bennett from Utah, three-termer. There's no way that freshman is going to be able to bring in the bucks for Utah. And that's the way the system works.
We're talking with Dr. Larry Sabato, kind enough to join us here as we discuss a few political things in our country. I guess when it comes to the United States Senate, Dr. Sabato, what's next for West Virginia? And are both parties kind of looking at West Virginia as a seat that they definitely, if you're one party to retain or the other one to try to pick it up?
If you read the code carefully, you would have thought there would have been a special election this November.
Mm-hmm.
There probably should have been. But there's absolutely no way that Democrats were going to permit that seat to go on the ballot in November. First of all, it would have created another competitive election in a year when Democrats are already having to defend a lot of seats. And West Virginia has voted Republican for president since 2000. So they'd have to spend money there. They'd have to spend time there. The incumbent governor who covets the seat, Joe Manchin, wants that seat, but he's in midterm. His term doesn't end until 2012. He can't appoint himself. He could, technically, but if he did, he'd probably lose. So he's, in all likelihood, going to appoint a seat warmer now that they have reinterpreted the code so that the election will be in 2012 instead of November 2010. He can appoint a seat warmer to sit for 2.5 years, at which point he will then run for Senate and very probably win it. I don't think the Republicans have a candidate. Shelley Moore Capito, a congresswoman from West Virginia, would be the best candidate for the Republicans, but she couldn't beat Manchin. She knows that, and instead she'll probably run for governor, which her father, Arch Moore, held for 8 years.
Dr. Sabato, Elena Kagan, as we transition here to these, the what I like to refer to as the dog and pony show, but is there, what is the, when you look at our process with these confirmations and the fact that 4 hours of statements from senators before she even speaks on the first day, as you've observed this, number one, what have you seen from Kagan, Elena Kagan, the nominee? We expect her to be confirmed. What have you seen in this process? And do you have the same kind of observation that a lot of us do when we get apathetic and say, "What? Here we go again. It's all for the cameras."
Yeah, no, it's kabuki theater. I don't even watch much of it because it's pretty worthless. You know, we have nominees who can't tell us where they stand because it would lose votes in the confirmation process. And we have senators who are staging things for the cameras. The whole confirmation process has become a joke because the Senate, and for that matter, the Supreme Court, are deeply polarized. And the less you say, the better chance you have of being confirmed. It's no more than a combination of two games, hide and go seek and catch me if you can. That's all it is.
Wow.
And it's a shame. But, you know, it's true on both sides. I laughed out loud in the hearings for Chief Justice John Roberts when he said he was going to be a neutral umpire, just calling balls and strikes. What a joke. Everybody knew how he was going to vote, and sure enough, he's been consistently conservative. I listened to Elena Kagan say how modest she's going to be in interpreting the Constitution, and, oh, she'll consider every case on its own merits. Sure she will. And we know how she's going to vote in virtually every political case. You know, there are some that are technical, and you never know how they're going to vote, but the political cases, you can predict right now she's going to come down with the liberal bloc. She's going to vote virtually the same as John Paul Stevens, at least in the second half of his tenure on the court. So, you know, it's kabuki theater. We have the nominees and the senators pretending in various ways and playing that game they play so well. I don't know how much it helps us. I don't think it helps us very much at all.
We're talking with Dr. Larry Sabato, University of Virginia Center for Politics. The philosophy is always politics is a good thing, regardless of what we see here. And looking at the president,
the process, James,
yeah, the process.
I don't defend politicians very much. You know, politicians are not necessarily good things, at least not in a lot of cases. But the process, it's just what Churchill said: it's the worst possible system, except for all the others.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me ask you about the current administration and President Obama from a political capital standpoint, Dr. Sabato, or however we want to define it. How bad has this BP incident, for lack of any other term, really been for the administration, or has it been bad?
Well, it hasn't helped him, but we've got a piece coming out about this in our crystal ball. Our website that is a free newsletter goes out every Thursday if people want it. But it's actually had almost no effect on Obama's ratings. He's virtually at the same place he was when the BP spill occurred. So what people talk about and what's in the headlines are very different than the ratings people give presidents or congresses or whatever. Generally, they judge on the basis of the economy, secondarily, probably war and peace issues. But this is way down the list in terms of judging a president. You can be critical, but it's not going to affect your overall rating. At least it doesn't for most people. And the proof is in the polling averages for Obama. They haven't changed. If it's had such a big effect, How come it hasn't cost him 5 or 10 points?
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Saba, the last one I looked at, was he at about a 55% approval rating, something along those lines?
Well, that's for his personal rating.
Okay.
The job approval right now is the polling average has him about 48, somewhere around 48.
Okay. So if you, and referencing a crystal ball, is it too early to say, is President Obama in some type of, should be concerned when it comes to 2012 in a reelection campaign?
Ridiculously early.
Okay.
Laughably early. listen, Ronald Reagan was below where Obama is right now in 1982, his first midterm election. In fact, a column appeared in the Washington Post suggesting that he should step down after one term, that he was another failed president in a long series of them, and there was no way he could be reelected. And that was the common wisdom, the conventional wisdom. And, of course, the economy rebounded just in time for his reelection. He had a strong 1984, and he got 58% of the vote. Now, will that necessarily happen for Obama? I don't know, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah.
He could be another Jimmy Carter, an unlucky president with lots of bad things happening in the election year and losing, or he could be another Ronald Reagan, somebody whose ratings were relatively weak at midterm but who rebounded and won easily. Anybody who says they know for sure what's going to happen in 2012 is just a dyed-in-the-wool partisan. They're totally predictable. They always say the same thing, and it always favors their side.
Yeah. When it comes to looking at this process, the Tea Party, both nationally and there's the Jefferson Area Tea Party here locally in our community, what effect do you think that they have had on it, whether it's just political discourse or on the process thus far?
Well, I haven't followed the local ones, but let me generalize it to the national. In some places, in some districts, in some states, they've strengthened the Republican Party's chances this year because they've added energy and enthusiasm, which a party needs, particularly in a midterm election when the turnout is low. Presidential election has 62-63% of adults participating. We'll be lucky if we hit 40% in November. So you're losing 20-23% of the electorate. Who shows up? The most energetic, the most enthusiastic. They have a disproportionate impact in midterms. By the way, that won't be true in 2012, which is why the conclusions drawn by people after November about 2012 will almost certainly be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the Tea Party, that's the plus. The minus is they've nominated candidates in a number of places that are weaker than the establishment choices were. That is, the establishment choices had a better chance of winning the general election. I'm thinking, for example, of Sharon Angle in Nevada in the Senate race against Majority Leader Harry Reid, or Rand Paul in Kentucky in the race for that open seat. Another case of this may be occurring in Colorado, where a Tea Party candidate, Ken Buck, is upsetting somebody who would almost certainly win the general election, former Lieutenant Governor Jane Norton, for the Republicans. Having said that, if this is a heavily Republican year, and we don't know that yet, it's going to be a Republican year, but we don't know if it's heavily Republican. If it is heavily Republican, then they could win all three seats, even with these much more conservative candidates.
We pay a lot of attention, obviously, to the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we who live here, we ascribe a lot of political significance to it in the grand scheme of things. But I want to ask you, because you always stay pretty objective about this as we talk with Dr. Larry Sabato, who's been kind enough to join us. The 5th District here, and I don't know how closely you've followed this, but do you think that there's a significant amount of interest for Republicans to get that seat back and for Democrats to protect Tom Perriello in that seat?
Well, sure. Of course, because it was the closest race of 2008. So naturally, it's been targeted by both sides in this election. And since Republicans are nearly guaranteed to gain at least 24, maybe 36 seats in November, it's pretty obvious that the 5th District is a seat that's very, very shaky for the Democrats. Having said that, the Republican candidate has a lot of work to do, Robert Hurd, in consolidating the Republican vote, and including the Tea Party people who voted for other candidates in the primary. But it's a race where you're going to see both sides spend millions of dollars, and you're going to be sick of all the TV ads, and they're going to turn highly negative, really vicious by November. That's inevitable. That's probably the most targeted seat in Virginia. Oh, actually, there are four of them in Virginia. Out of 11 seats, you have four, all of them currently held by Democrats, that are under assault by Republicans. Now, I don't think Republicans are going to want all four of them. They'll be lucky to get three. They may get two. But the other really vulnerable Democrat is in Norfolk, another first-termer, Glenn Nye, who won in 2008 with the Obama vote. You know, it was a matter of coattails. The other two seats are in the 9th District, longtime Congressman Rick Boucher under assault there. He's the favorite, but you never know. And then Northern Virginia, another freshman, Gerald Connolly, elected in 2008, coming up for his second term. He's the least likely to lose of the four.
You referenced the 2008 in our last few moments with Larry Sabato from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Now, in these 2010 elections, with a 48% job approval rating and maybe 55% personal approval, as you cited, of the president, in these four races you just cited, can you use coattails, or will we see the phenomenon we saw with George W. Bush towards the end in 2008, where people were starting to distance themselves in certain areas? And this has been really quick. It'd be quick to do that. But do you think we'll see a phenomenon like that, where these candidates will not necessarily want the administration's help in their local races?
Well, that's already happening in some places. You've got some Democrats actually criticizing Obama and trying to separate themselves from Obama in their races. Remember, Obama's name's not on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And these candidates for Senate and House and governor across the country have to generate their own turnout. By the way, that's especially true in Virginia, because there's no statewide contest. There's no contest for governor. There's no contest for senator. There's no referendum, no constitutional amendment that would bring out people as a group. There's only the U.S. House races and some local offices. So the turnout really matters, and that's where a well-organized candidate like Tom Perriello, he does have a strong local organization. He can maximize his turnout because people are dedicated to him, and that's going to be the challenge, I think, for Robert Hurd, the Republican, to get his people as excited as the Democrats are. The advantage for Hurd is that the 5th District normally leans Republican.
We've been talking with Dr. Larry Sabato, University of Virginia Center for Politics. It's always good stuff. And yes, Dr. Sabato, you do convince us that politics is a good thing.
It can be a good thing. That would be a more accurate slogan. Politics can be a good thing. I'm as disappointed as most people are most of the time.
Yeah. And tell us again where folks can find more of the publications from the center and all that good stuff.
I hope they'll go to our website, centerforpolitics.org, centerforpolitics.org. They can click right on the crystal ball, and they can order the email for free. And by the way, we don't give out the web list of our subscribers because it's just not the right thing to do. So they won't get a bunch of spam emails, and they'll just get the free analysis every Thursday morning.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Sabato, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jay. Good luck.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.